What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my face.
I don't want to talk about
see
poop.
See a six-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree?
I don't know why you do it. It doesn't matter.
Season 7, part 4.
Coming to an end.
I'm the great and powerful mystery.
And I'm JClone779.
And we just want to take a second before we wrap up the season finale and just say thank you guys for all the support and love and all the stuff we've been allowed to do through you guys. It's been amazing. So just thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Everything from speaking at some of the biggest festivals in the world now.
Yeah.
Running our own festivals, doing live shows where you guys show up, buying t-shirts. It's crazy seeing people in your t-shirts, like, walking around.
Yeah, that is wild. It's just like, oh, there's a friend. Oh, like, there's a friend.
Peyton and Bailey. So here's a shout out for them.
Yeah.
They do all Patreon forever, and they've done a bunch of our stuff with us. She was talking about how one of her coworkers said, are you the Peyton and Bailey that they talk about on the podcast? Yes. Like, yes, you are.
Yes, indeed.
She's actually in the intro.
Indeed. Indeed.
So we're back. We're back. The once was's.
Once was's part 4. We're back. And I forget. I don't even remember where we left off at last episode. It's been so long ago.
A bath. It's at least spelled a bath.
Okay. Oh, that's our first one here?
Mm-hmm. It's Indonesia.
Oh, Indonesia. I think I left, I was in Madagascar maybe last, or no, I was in South America.
Yeah.
With the hippos.
With the hippos that weren't hippos.
And that turned out to be manatee, and I didn't even know.
Man, that was the one I thought you were going to get. We kind of talked about it. I think you've gotten 3-ish, right?
Maybe. I hope you're keeping count at home. There, you got your little tally marker on the wall that to mark all my corrections?
Drinking game. Or you have to pick whether you drink when you get one right or drink when you get one wrong.
Oh, no.
If you pick wrong, you're going to die from alcohol poisoning.
Yeah, that's not play that game.
So we've talked about unicorn-like creatures, you know, as in they're a rarity and everything like that in the season finale.
The okapi was the one.
The abath is an actual unicorn.
Okay.
It is a unicorn-type creature from Indonesia. It is described as a large being that stands on four legs that has a large gray-brown horn in the center of its forehead. European privateer James Lannister was venturing through the kingdom of Lusmar in the late 1500s. Now it's, I'm going to try to say this, like Phuket Island, Thailand.
Okay.
Like Phuket.
Okay.
Where he came upon some horns of the Abath for sale. So he's going through this market in this kingdom in the basically modern day Thailand.
Okay.
He's from Europe though. And he sees horns of the Abath for sale.
Interesting.
So he had acquired a what creature that these horns came from. He'd never seen a horn like it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a market where it's not unusual to find, you know, body parts and pieces of creatures from all over.
So, but just one singular horn, right?
There was a couple horns. There was a couple of Abath horns.
Oh, okay, okay. But they each one came from one animal.
Yes.
Okay.
One horn per Abath.
There we go.
When he, and you know, asked where the creature horns came from, he was told the Abath. And basically he said, you know, they discussed it was a type of female unicorn. Locals described the Abath as a large beast that walked on all fours, had a gray-brown horn in color, and a mane of rough, bristly hair. In the center of its forehead grew its spectacular horn. The horn was prized as an antidote for many, many poisons.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I know where this is going.
It's Thailand, so they're eating them. Anybody know, if you want to go find endangered markets, go to like a Thailand,
medicine market,
a Chinese food market. Forrest Galante did that.
Yeah.
And they had, I think, 14 or 15 endangered species before they got kicked out, they found.
Oh, nice. He got kicked out?
Yeah, because they figured out what he was doing.
Right, yeah. Oh, he's in trouble.
Oh, he's alive. He's back to the country.
But, oh, I don't know how. That's lucky.
But I think it was because of his notoriety he was allowed to leave.
Wow.
Like, if he goes missing, people are going to be looking.
Looking, yeah, exactly.
Because he did live streams like, whip, we're going to this market.
Yeah.
And then if he disappeared, they're like, well, he was murdered in that market, and people are going to come looking.
Yeah.
So the knowledge was incorporated. He purchased a number of these horns. He bought a whole truckload of them.
Okay.
And he took them back to his homeland to sell.
Oh, so he bought, okay.
Well, that's what he was doing. He was a privateer, so that's
okay,
what they do.
Okay.
Like, they go off the spices and goods and stuff from other countries and bring home to sell.
Gotcha, okay.
So that was what he did for a living.
Okay.
The knowledge was incorporated back into the English mythology, where the male unicorns were described as being beautiful and delicate creatures, while the females were sometimes described as being stocky and bulky in appearance.
Okay.
So, because all the, in Thailand, where he got these horns, it said that these creatures were all female.
Okay.
So they just assumed that all their unicorns were male, that they had in their folklore, and that these were the female.
Okay.
Historians believe the Abath could be a couple different animals. These animals are called labada by Portuguese travelers, and the word is similar sounding, though, to Abath. Marco Polo reported seeing a number of unicorns while traveling through the kingdom of Burmese. He claimed these unicorns were very, very different than the unicorns of Europe stories, though. Instead of being delicate and horse-like creatures, the Indonesian unicorns were ugly, mud-wallowing brutes.
Mm.
Abath in pulp culture. The Grimm Diaries, like the TV show Grimm, a horn of the Abath is a primary weapon that is used to impale small children and eat them.
Oh, jeez. That's gruesome.
Yeah, so any idea what the Abath could be? And they were very secretive and very rare when they were still like looking for them. Very few people. So Abath horns got rarer and rarer and rarer.
Huh, I wonder why. I got two guesses.
Oh, well, let me get the horns ready.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me your best guess first, and I'll tell you I'll take two answers.
Well, this is going to be my kind of, I'm going to guess it with a cryptid. This is a joke guess. It's a Snolly Gloster. I knew that wasn't.
That's one of the horns on its back.
I know, it's just the horn impaling people. That was kind of a joke one.
So what's your real guess?
Okay, my real guess is going to be the woolly rhino.
The woolly rhino. You got one of the words right.
Rhino. I figured it was a rhino. It had to be a rhino.
It's actually one you accidentally brought up last episode.
Oh, I did?
Yes.
Oh, an Indian rhino.
The Java rhino or the Sumatran rhino. The two different, we'll talk about it. There's a greater one horned rhino, white, Drava, Sumatran, and black. There's no Indian rhino.
So why'd they put that there at the...
Because they're from India.
Okay.
But it's either Javan or Sumatran, depending on where you're at in Indonesia.
But the nameplate on the zoo, literally, I know. It just said Indian rhino. Saying.
So we're gonna talk. The Abath is most likely a Java rhino.
Okay.
They are almost gone. Now.
Not good.
Java rhinos, we think there's only 67 Java rhinos left on Earth.
Are you kidding me? I hope it's not that one in the zoo.
No, I believe that was a Sumatran rhino, but okay. I will. No, it was a Javan in the zoo.
How do you know?
By the size of it.
There's only 60 of them left?
In the wild.
Still, that's a pretty small number.
Yeah, there's not a lot of them.
Is that extra?
So little is known about this extremely rare species of rhino. Sadly, they become critically endangered. Once widespread throughout Southeast Asia, they were hunted, and now they only exist in Yung Klun National Forest in Southeast Java in Indonesia.
Okay.
But they were hunted for their horns.
Well, yeah. What is it? Ivory? Are the horns ivory?
No.
No, they're keratin.
They don't have any horn. They don't have any ivory.
Yeah, that's elephant tusk. That's right.
Tusk, hippo teeth, and elk bugle teeth are ivory.
Okay.
Ivory is a tooth enamel, a specialized tooth.
Oh, okay. So, they're hunted. So they're hunted just for their horns.
Yeah, they were literally killed for being unicorns.
Dang, that's nuts.
That's why unicorns got rare. Like I said, there's only believed to be about 67 Javan rhinos, and they all have names.
Oh, really?
Yes. One of them is literally called, American exclamation mark.
America?
No, exclamation mark.
Oh, okay. Prince.
That's, what it translates to.
Or the artist formerly known as Prince.
Yeah. But it translates roughly to, exclamation mark or expletive.
Oh, it's not just the symbol?
No.
Oh, okay.
It just what
it's, so it's not like Prince no. or the artist formerly known as.
They are heavily armored animals weighing up to 2.5 tons. They live to be 45. They eat plants. They are extremely solitary. They do mate, and they do kind of stick together when they mate for a little bit, but the male often leaves. Mothers will stay with the young for some period of time before they kind of go their separate ways. They are the second largest animal in Indonesia by body weight, next to the Asian elephant. Male Javan rhinos mark their territory with giant dung piles that they spray on with urine.
Oh, gosh.
Scrapes are made by their feet on the ground and twist saplings they use to communicate their territories and stuff. Their cause in population decline is mainly due to poaching and excessive demand for their horns in medicine.
Mm.
Poaching primarily wiped out the species in Vietnam, India, and China.
You know, you need all that rare animal horn just to cure your headache.
Right now, their biggest thing is their food source in their national forest they live in is being taken out by an invasive organ palm.
Ooh, okay.
So they can't eat the palms.
No.
So the other possibility is Sumatran rhinos. So Javan rhinos are a lot bigger. Javan rhinos are pretty big.
Okay.
Sumatran rhinos are really small. They are the smallest of all living rhino species. They are pretty much only found, though, in the dense forest of Sumatra and Borneo, and it's listed as critically endangered.
Oh, okay. That's not good.
There's only 80 of these left in the wild.
Well, that's even more than the other one had less.
Yes.
That's more than the last one.
Not by much.
No. They all have names, too?
These rhinos are unique, not just for their size, but also their hairy bodies.
Ooh.
They're covered in reddish brown hair.
Like wool?
Not quite like woolly rhinos. They're in patches, but you can tell that.
I just wanted my initial answer to be right.
What?
The woolly rhino answer. I wanted it to be right.
They are the only Asian rhino with two horns, though, Sumatrans.
Oh, okay. They got the double, one stacked on the other.
Yeah,
not
so
side
the
by
Javan
side.
Rhino is probably the one they were killing for the unicorns, but Sumatrans were probably in there too, depending on where you were at versus Thailand, China, India.
Right.
It depends. Either one, it was one of these species of rhino.
Gotcha.
It was both very secretive jungle dwelling rhinos.
Like the water.
They both like water.
Like peeing on its pile of poo.
Sumatra rhinos now are less, they're both critically endangered. Like I said, there's not many of them left of either of these rhino species. No rhino's doing good. I'll let you know that right now.
In the world. Yeah.
None of them are doing good.
They once were.
They only get up to 1,700 pounds, though.
Okay. I mean, it's still big.
It's still big, but it's half the size of the next smallest rhino.
Yeah, okay.
So it's very small compared to a rhino. They have thick keratin. You know, their horns are made of keratin, the same stuff human hair and nails is made of.
Mm-hmm.
They have extremely poor eyesight, but great smell and hearing.
Okay.
Any questions?
No, not really. I mean, there's an interesting little unicorns.
They are unicorns. So the joke I've always made that European unicorns were woolly rhinos. These guys were unicorns. They were literally selling the Abath horns. They used to be very plentiful.
As unicorn horns.
As, you know, I mean, because they were.
Right.
As far as the horse-like animal with a big horn, but the European, the Asian unicorn was said to be this big brutish mud dweller.
Gotcha.
Both Sumatrans and Javan rhinos are mud dwellers.
Okay.
They have little pits where they cool off in and stuff like that. So that's how they would hunt them, is they would find their pits and just wait for them to come back, and then they'd stab them to death. Or they'd do the nail traps for them. They'd find their trails.
Yeah.
And then, because once they step, they can't move.
Right.
So they get a big nail through their foot, and they just stand there until you come and shoot them.
Because they lift that foot up, and they can't walk with three legs.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're too big to walk with three legs.
Yeah.
Like, around 1,000 pounds, I think, is kind of the limit for that.
What a brutal thing to do. Just, I don't know.
I mean, there's a reason the guy that protects rhinos and gorillas, and like, if you guys see the guys that devote their life to protecting animals from poachers.
Yeah.
They kill a lot of people.
Like poachers?
Yeah, well, it's poachers. The one guy said, you know, if you get too close to this rhino without me knowing, you will die.
Yeah.
You ever seen that? The group of six guys that follows, I think it's the last Western black rhino around.
I don't think so.
It's they dedicate their life every day, 24 hours a day. They camp and follow this because it's the last male of the whole species.
So they're waiting for someone to try it.
And oh, no, people have tried.
Yeah.
I think they kill like 30 or 40 people a year.
Jeez.
And the camera guy, they were like talking to the camera guy. Like, yeah, if they didn't tell us you were coming, we would have shot you guys. I don't care if you're holding a camera or not.
Jeez.
You get close to this rhino.
You're dead.
It's it.
You're dead meat.
And then there's that guy that protects one of the rare subspecies of gorilla, and he does the same thing where he's just like, he's devoted his life. He doesn't have kids. He doesn't have a wife. He just lives with these gorillas.
Yeah.
He carries like an AR.
Gosh, that's insanity.
And the gorillas, he's like, yeah, they're used to it. When I shoot, they don't move.
Well, if they're used to it, that's good habituation.
Back to Papua New Guinea.
Okay. Oh, we're going back there again.
Yes. I had to spread them out a lot because Papua New Guinea's full of them.
You know, you really would have saved a lot of my gas meter, my gas tank, if you'd just let me stay there. We're pulling a Taylor Swift,
private jets.
Ooh, yeah. Let's go on like 4 days.
The Artalilla.
Artalilla.
The Artalilla.
Artalilla.
Oceania country. So yeah, Pacific Northwest, just north of Australia, is the islands of New Guinea. The country's covered, like what we talked about, large mountains. It's rugged landscapes, very primal. You can find all kinds of stuff. On some of these islands, in the dense rainforest, is a creature thought to be a dragon, known as the Artilla.
Okay.
The monstrous Artilla was described by locals as being nearly 30 feet long, crocodile-like dragon creature, with the ability, though, to climb trees and even breathe fire or corrosive acid. So,
it's a hodag.
It is a strict carnivore and devours anything unlucky enough to enter its territory and consumes the entire body of its victims, bones and all. So unlike some of the other terrestrial dragons, this thing is, even at full size, is quite comfortable in the forest canopy.
Okay.
Which makes it very terrifying to watch a 30-foot lizard dragon monster run from the ground up into the forest trees.
And gone.
Like, oh gosh,
yeah.
Where'd it go?
This is above me.
At 1933, Richard Archibald, an American zoologist and philanthropist, led one of the first scientific expeditions to the heart of the New Guinea territory. The expedition became known as the Archibald Expedition. The main task was to map the island, document the environment, study and collect various forms of plant and animal life within the jungles. It was during these expeditions, which lasted from 1933 to 1939, that they stopped in 1939 for some reason.
Mm.
The team was told and warned when they got to this area about a giant man-eating dragon from the locals. Remember any other Papua New Guinea man-eating dragons?
Well, I mentioned earlier,
don't say it yet.
Oh.
Don't say it yet, because whenever you say it, it's your guess.
Okay, then I'm not going to say.
They were warned by their team would happen to come across the Artilla, they would never be found again. The dragon would devour every last bit of them and leave nothing for the scavengers. But during World War II, 1939 to 1945, American, British, and Australian soldiers were stationed in Papua New Guinea as a part of the New Guinea campaign, originally occupied by the Japanese. The empire eventually began to surrender to the Allies due to the efforts naval blockades, and the islands would soon be occupied by Allied troops. During this time, the Allied troops began reporting seeing giant lizard-like monsters in the rainforest.
Oh boy, here we go.
So they're like, yeah, we took it back from the jet. Is that a dragon? 15 to 20 feet in length and extremely agile.
Okay.
Which, keep in mind, of the animals you're probably thinking about, they're heavy ground-built animals. This thing is not. Okay. It is a giant lizard that can fly up into the trees and disappear. While no direct contact was ever made with these lizards, the sightings continued regularly. All through the Allied troops eventually left the island at the end of the war. So even though they didn't, and nobody was attacked by this thing.
Right.
And they didn't kill one. They would just see like a 15 to 20 foot lizard look at him, go and run up a tree.
Okay. So that's what they were seeing.
Yeah. And they're like, that's a dragon.
So am I good to guess now?
No, I still got more. Okay. I mean, you can if you want. No, more information or?
No, I need more details.
Fast forward to the 1960s, the last district commissioner of Port Moresby, which is the capital city of Papua New Guinea, okay, David Marsh, marks official statements regarding the sightings of giant lizard dragons within the jungle in the 1940s while stationed as a patrol officer. So the head guy of the whole area was like...
He's seen them.
Yeah, they're real.
Yeah.
He just, like, people are asking about them. Yeah, they just live in the jungle.
Right, yeah.
They're just a big thing. Like, we never had a problem with them, but... There are giant monsters in the jungle. What would you do if your head guy was like that? Like the mayor Ada came out like, yeah, I seen Dog Man. That'd be more believable.
I'd be wanting to interview him, I guess. I don't know.
During the same year after Marsh made his public statements, local residents in the, I'm not even going to try to say, Kurahokahuri district delivered to the Agricultural Administration a large unknown skin and jawbone of a creature that nobody could explain.
Wow.
Okay. They found a chunk from a dead one.
Yeah.
They found a chunk of skin in some of the jawbone, and they brought it to the Agricultural Commission. And they're like, we don't know what this is. It's a monster. A year later, in 1961, two explorers by the names of Robert Grant and David George were exploring the Starchin Island district, and they had a visual encounter of the Arturilla. Two men described the unknown lizard as having gray skin, or the neck did appear to be easily 3 foot long, and it stood nearly 4 feet tall. And its body was believed to measure around 26 feet length.
Okay, that's pretty long.
The men kept their distance for personal safety reasons. The giant lizard looked at them and then disappeared back into the forest.
Gosh.
So unlike so far, I'll give you some hints. Unlike some of the other giant dragon lizards we've talked about.
Komodo dragon was the one we talked about.
Yes.
That's not my guess. I'm assuming you're not going to put the Komodo dragon on here twice.
Different island. Different island.
I'm aware.
No, but very arboreal, so means going into the trees a lot, even for its large size.
Okay.
It loves going into the canopy, which is not a Komodo dragon trait. They do not like...
No, they're just ground only.
The babies will go up, but once they get kind of like 2 foot or longer, they really can't do it anymore. They're built for ground and tackling heavy prey.
Okay.
And... this guy seemed to be very shy so far. Every time they're seeing people, they look at people and then they go off the other way. They don't seem to be picking fights when the stories of Komodo dragons and the other big lizard seem to not care. Like, they'll pick a fight. They don't care.
Gotcha. Is this like an animal that I should know?
I already give you enough hits.
All right.
Nearly 40 years after the Archibald expeditions, another exploring team would arrive in Papua New Guinea, this time with the Operation Drake expedition. Operation Drake was an international, round-the-world scientific voyage involving with young researchers between the ages of 17 and 27, or 24, with different countries that were funded by the Scientific Explorers Society. This expedition was split into 10 different phases, 9 taking place on the ocean and 1 taking place on land. The phase were part of the serious scientific exploration, research, and communal projects. The leader of the expedition, Colonel John Blashford Schneel. While stopping in Papua New Guinea, Colonel Blashford became highly intrigued by the stories and sightings told by the locals of the Arturilla. After interviewing various eyewitnesses, the team eventually made their way into the Papua New Guinean swamps and searched the jungles for nearly 2 months. Yeah, there's a giant monster that'll eat you. Let's go.
In the jungle.
I mean, I get it. Here we are, an explorer.
All right, let's go. Let me get my water can.
Get the net.
Yeah.
Bringing the team of local hunters with them, the man managed to kill a lizard measuring almost 6 feet in length.
Wow.
So they killed a big lizard.
That's impressive.
At first, it appeared to be their search was successful. The true dragon had been found in the jungles in the swamps of Papua New Guinea. But the dragon was not a mystery. It had already been named.
What was it?
I'm not going to tell you. This is when you guess.
Oh. Well, I figured it was, this wasn't it, what they call it.
It was a baby.
Okay. Well, Megalania? I don't know. Nope. Okay, what about a giant iguana?
Nope.
All right, then I don't know.
You would never guess this one.
Okay. Well, thanks for the hint then.
The Salvador's monitor.
Oh, yeah. I would have never guessed the Salvador's monitor.
Which is another monitor lizard.
Right.
We're going to talk about the Salvador's monitor because I didn't know about them until this. They are crazy.
Okay.
They are a subspecies of crocodile monitor. And during this time, so right now, it is viewed that their maximum size is 13 feet, but there are bones in partial skins from specimens that we believe were upwards of 16 or 17 feet in length.
That's pretty big.
But they're arboreal. They're really fast in the canopies, even for their size.
Mm.
So this species of giant lizard can run up and just disappear into the canopy.
Yeah, that's kind of nuts.
So that's, everybody, when I was first seeing this, were like, it's just a Komodo dragon. I'm like, nothing about this sounds, besides big lizard, big dragon lizard.
Right.
Yes, I get that the Komodos are like 50 miles that way.
Yeah.
They're right there. This is a whole different giant reptile.
With different behaviors.
So the creature that was found was a juvenile.
Okay.
The creature they caught, they realized, this is a baby.
How do they know that, though?
The coloring.
Okay.
So Salvador's monitors changed. Another biologist had discovered him in a different part of Papua New Guinea.
Okay.
So he was looking at the stuff. And keep in mind, this is, what did I say, the 19... I don't
okay.
even know.
Okay, yeah. That was...
The 1980s, sorry.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. Duh, very, very recently. 40 years ago.
So, yeah. Where another zoologist had to kind of describe them. So these giant, the Artilla is most likely this thing that took place in the 80s where people were selling this, where they were seeing a Salvador's monitor. And let's talk about Salvador's monitors. They are a crocodile monitor. They are the longest lizard species.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they're longer than Komodo dragons.
Yeah. What sounds like it, that one that you described, what, 20 feet?
So like I said, typically, their adult length is about 10 feet long and about 50 pounds.
Okay. So it's
they are very slender, though, mm-hmm. compared to other big monitor lizards.
Especially Komodo.
Yeah. They even elongated structures. They are a type of crocodile monitor.
Which, what's that mean?
It's just a group of monitor, a separate group of monitor lizards.
Okay.
They're revered as probably being the smartest group of monitor lizards.
Mm, okay.
Highly intelligent. There's a lot of different species of crocodile monitor. And in captivity, they're really troublesome.
Yeah.
Because you need to keep them engaged.
Okay.
They can get very aggressive and mean if they don't. Yeah, they get bored.
Yeah.
They're like big cats. A lot of people that keep them really talk about them as like keeping a big cat. Like, gotcha. You got to move their environment. You got to give them stuff to get into, hide food.
Yeah.
Like all that. And they can be incredibly easy to work with the right, if you have them, but if you just keep them in a box,
you got to keep them entertained.
They're going to get mean and nasty.
Yeah.
Because it's like torturing them. Whereas animals more like a ball python,
they like the box.
They'll just live in a box. They don't care. In the wild, they're so terrified. But yeah, they're extremely long and they're known for their arboreal lifestyle. These are apex predators, targeting birds, mammals, reptiles, and also scavenging. There are unsubstantiated reports of them even eating livestock, like their cousins. The Komodo dragon.
Okay.
And they're beautiful. They have crazy coloring patterns throughout their whole life. They are not endangered as of yet. They do face threats mostly for hunting for their skin.
Okay, for the pattern.
Yeah, they're really beautiful and they're being hunted for their skin and the exotic pet trade. They're illegally being taken in because if you go to try to like buy a crocodile monitor, there are captive bred ones.
Mm.
They're like grands. Like you buy them with a price tag with the last word is grand on it.
Oh, expensive is what you're saying.
They are very high dollar lizards.
Unaffordable for a podcast host.
They should be because they take such a large space.
Yeah, it needs a run.
I'm all for, and I've talked about this before, if you have an animal that needs that much, that costs, let's say, $8,000 or $9,000 a year to take care of this animal, yes, it probably should be pricey. I hate when you see alligators for like $30.
Yeah.
Because Joe Smo will buy it and take it home like it's a leopard gecko.
And then it requires more than $30 to raise that animal.
There should be a price of entry. A price point of entry. I don't think anything should be illegal to own. But I do think there should be like we've talked about this before, like a permitting process.
Right. Yeah.
To say that it's a crocodile monitor that gets 13 feet long and needs a huge, I'm talking like a giant enclosure. And it's arboreal. It needs to climb. It goes, you know, it lives in
trees
canopy
and stuff. Yeah.
So to keep that thing entertained or healthy, it takes a lot of money. Or a lion, you know, same thing. Like,
yeah, same thing.
I don't think it should be illegal to own a lion, but I think there should be rules.
Regulation.
So it's hard. I'll try to remember to post this when this part comes out. But there's that corpse of a 9-footer next to a person.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And why they're unsubstantiated, there are claims of them eating people.
Oh, that's not good. That's bad news.
The longest accurately recorded specimen was right around 12 feet.
Okay, that's pretty big still.
And like I said, there are unsubstantiated reports of them getting 16 and even 17 feet long with either pieces and witnesses.
Gosh.
There are many credible eyewitnesses that claim that they've seen them at 16 feet in the wild.
So they can get that big.
Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, a large portion of that is their tail.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're very slender. Even at that size, they're only going to be maybe 70 pounds, 80 pounds when Komodo dragons are getting hundreds.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But Komodo dragons are stocky built ground dwellers.
Right, right. That scavengers beat big meals. Yeah.
And then they fight large prey items.
Yeah.
Like buffalo and elephant and stuff.
For themselves.
Or each other.
Yeah.
And there's a picture I'll show you. I know. I can't show anybody at home.
What's that?
A baby one in the tree.
Oh, it does have a nice little pattern on it.
That's just the baby pattern. Then they're yellow, they're green and yellow and polka dotted when they're adults. Hmm. But yeah, I mean, they eat anything. They're highly, I think these guys are really cool. So yeah. The crocodile monitors.
Yeah, they're pretty neat. Back in
the longest lizard.
It seems like Papua New Guinea is a place I don't really want to venture out into.
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, we've done like the living dinosaurs episodes.
It's a weird little place.
Any questions about that guy?
No.
Salvador's monitor?
Yeah. I didn't realize there was another giant monitor.
The longest. It's longer Komodo dragons.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that.
Big bruisers.
I learned something new.
There you go. I'm glad. I mean, now, this is probably the scariest one on this list.
All right, let me get my keys and get the car fired up. Where are we going?
Oh, gosh, now.
Oh, I threw you off your...
Yeah, the Ulama.
Ulama.
Where is this from?
Well, just start reading. I'll punch it into my GPS once you get there.
The Ulama. Where did I put this?
You know how this works.
Sri Lanka.
Oh, Sri Lanka. We talked about Sri Lanka already.
I'm like, I just had it pulled up.
All right.
Anybody couldn't tell, we just took a pause.
Oh, yes, yes.
The Ulama is also known as the devil bird.
Ooh, this is our first bird.
Is it?
I think so.
Well, I didn't say it was a bird. It's just called the devil bird.
Oh. Well, first one with the bird in the name.
Yeah. And that's Ulama roughly translates to devil bird or red eyes or red-eyed demon.
Okay.
It means a couple different things depending on, there's several cultures that have the Ulama as their creature. It's called for foreshadowing a death in the village or extremely bad news whenever the Ulama shows up.
Okay.
Depending on on the omens on the island, the tale myths morph accordingly. But the tale is largely as follows. So I'm going to read you the actual folklore.
Gotcha.
Once there lived a family at the edge of the forest, a young couple and their son. The father has simmering suspicions about the parentry of his son, and one day, they doubts bubble over. He gets drunk, and he fights his wife, and the wife, upset, leaves the house briefly to cool down. While she returns, she finds her husband has made a meal for her as a peace offering, and she begins to eat.
Mm.
No.
Oh.
While eating, she notices that her son is missing. She comes across a small finger in the dish.
Oh, no.
She realizes with deep horror she was eating her own son. Her husband had killed her son and cooked him.
What kind of show is this?
When the erroneous of what her husband had done dawns on her, the blur of grief, she takes a wooden spoon and stabs herself, rushing into the forest and cursing her husband. The gods take pity on her and turn her into the devil bird.
Okay, that's a bad origin story. A wooden spoon? She stabbed herself with a wooden spoon?
Mm-hmm.
That's brutal.
There are multiple variations of this theme. Some in the versions, a husband was a farmer who comes home with meat for the night's meal and goes to have a bath and only finds a dog had run off with the meat. In others, he's a hunter who is so hungry, in a vile mood. After coming home, he empty-handed. He murders his son for meat. They're just, depending on which little group of people you're in, there's slight variations with this
story.
But it's all roughly the same story. It is said the cries of the devil bird are believed to give the spirits of anguished mothers an echoing her feral grief.
Okay.
Yeah. So there is no doubt. There is, so yeah, that's pretty much it. It is said to be a gigantic bestial bird-woman hybrid in Sri Lanka.
In Sri Lanka.
With glowing red eyes.
Is that my hint?
I mean, that's pretty much it. It's said to, like, people still, like, if you see it, you're going to die.
Is it a cassowary? That's my guess.
A cassowary?
Yeah.
A cassowary? No, Sri Lanka.
I don't know whether that's where they're from or not.
A big bird just hit the outside window.
I was going to, is that what that was?
No, it's somebody threw a ball.
Oh, somebody threw a ball.
It was Emily. She's laughing.
Oh, okay.
The window's open.
I really thought a bird. let's see here. It's not a cassowary. All right. A red-eyed, two-wing, purple people eater. I don't know. That's my guess.
It flies. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a cassowary. I'll tell you that.
It's not. It can't be a shoebill.
No.
I don't know. I guess
it's an extremely large predatory bird.
I guess that's my guess. Is I guess I lost again.
So there's no doubt that the bird of science needs studied, aka the ornithological, the ulna, is nothing more than a large predatory bird, says Dr. Sampath Swift, when he's going through bird calls and folklore in the surrounding area. He explains that the colonial naturalists weren't the first to discover the phenomena, and they started looking in order to pinpoint the particular animal could be. So they get to the, when conservationists and ornithologists come to the area, they're like, hey, there's a real bird because you can hear its calls.
Yeah.
And they're telling you a story. Well, it's this cursed woman's spirit.
Okay.
Well, they can hear the calls and they see these giant glowing red eyes. And they're like, it just has to be a bird, right? They had a few clues to work on. The call came from the forest only at night. They knew it was a powerful call and likely to be that of a large predatory bird from the sound alone. In their quest to identify the species making the call, the doctor and his fellow hunters shot and killed four large predatory nocturnal birds that they believed to be the devil bird.
Mm.
The spot-billed eagle owl, the crested eagle owl, the ornamental honey buzzard, and the legged hawk owl, or sorry, hawk eagle.
All those things sound like they're endangered.
Soon. All these birds have eerie, haunting nature, noted the doctor. But of all the species listed above, the broad consensus was the most likely contributor to the devil bird was the spotted-bellied eagle owl, which is an absolutely massive red-eyed owl.
Ah, spotted-bellied eagle owl.
It is, and you can see, I think Cincinnati has eagle owls. It's not the Sri Lankan eagle owl. I think it's a European eagle owl.
Yeah.
They are massive.
I'm gonna
they
look
are
it
scary.
Up.
If they were coming at you. So this is the largest of Sri Lanka's 12 species of owls and grows to be bigger than a turkey.
That's pretty big for an owl.
With a yellow bill and bright black or black eyes with red markings. It has been piercing calls that befitting its size and vocalizations surrounding its humans.
Huh.
It has ear tufts and it sits and waddles like a person hunched over.
This looks like the owl from Zelda and Ocarina of Time.
But there are other eagle owls. This is, oh no.
I mean, he looks like it. He has the eyebrows, the same like, well, pattern looks about the same. Maybe not that white bellied, like the spotted bellied part, maybe not as much. These are really neat looking. I would not, honestly, if I came across this like during the day or just, you know, got a good look at one like in these pictures, I would be a little off put with their eye. Like their eyes just look like grays, and obviously we've heard that
they
before.
Look like demons. They look like giant demons.
It's this big.
And they
black.
They hide and they'll stare at you.
Yeah,
and they make these scary, terrifying calls. especially during breeding season, they have breeding calls.
Yeah,
that just sound like somebody being beat to death.
Yeah, they don't. That wouldn't be fun to hear.
So and they just hop around. They look like a person dressed up as an owl, and they're walking around on the ground.
That's kind of what I was like. There's just something eerie with them.
They look like somebody pretending to be an owl.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm not joking. No, when you see them hop around and walk on the ground, they look like somebody wearing an owl costume.
That's pretty funny. Ooh, mm-hmm. Here's the, in the juvenile stage, they're more white. They're,
yeah.
They got that spotted belly pattern almost all over.
But yeah, so the devil bird.
All right. So is that what you're thinking this is?
It is the owl? Most likely. There's another species of owl that it could be. What I mentioned, it's the other eagle owl that has the more red eyes.
Yeah.
It's either or. But this, okay. The spotted eagle owl is absolutely massive.
Okay.
Like, it literally looks like a small person in a costume.
I'm telling you, though, I just pulled up the old, thing from Zelda.
Oh, yeah.
They look very,
Yeah, that or it's a horned owl or a tufted owl, but these guys are tough, too.
Okay.
All right. Ready for the next one?
Yeah.
Finally to North America.
Okay, finally. About time.
I'm going to try to say this. The kick...
Giving it away?
The kick...
Oh, that was it.
Mm-hmm. It is a Native American word that they put into English, and if anybody hasn't heard my complaints about that, it is not... The Native American language is not supposed to do that.
Doesn't fit with our language.
The Kiddick?
Like, look up Cuyahoga.
Gosh.
Doesn't make
so
sense.
So I'm going to go Kiddick is what I'm going to call it, a shortened word for
okay.
It. It's like the first part of its name.
Okay.
It's also known as the ghost tree.
Ooh, a tree?
It kinda.
Okay.
So it's also known as the ghost tree or the golden spruce.
Ooh, wow.
It only said to grow on the banks of the Yukon River in the archipelago of British Columbia. It is said to be a harbinger of portals and a spirit, like a spirit transmitter.
Yeah.
And they move around.
The trees do.
The trees move around.
Or the plant, whatever it is.
Yes. So it's a gold, it looks like all the other, it's the same species as all the other spruce trees around it, but it moves around, it said. It's never in the same spot. And they, like, lure you in.
Mm.
They can get you lost, like fae folk stuff.
Interesting.
You gonna guess?
Gosh, I have zero idea, but walking stick.
I didn't know how to do this one for you. It is just a spruce tree. It's the Sakura spruce tree. But there is a rare genetic mutation that causes the needles to be all golden in color rather than the usual green.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And it's considered sacred by the Hadda people that live there.
Well, I wouldn't think of it that way, too.
There's only been a couple of them.
Ever spotted, yes. I guess, in the wild?
The main one was fell in January of 1997 as an act of protest, or was felled in January of 19 by Grant Hadrick as an act of protest against the log industry. When it fell, its fellings are subject to John Verdon's book, The Golden Spruce. Check it out. There's not much to this one. I just seen people post it because they did not think this was real. People yeah. really believed that they were not real until they seen a couple of them.
The golden spruce.
But yeah, they're still there. It's a rare genetic mutation. And there's one living right now.
Where's that at?
It's one of the babies of that big one that fell.
Oh, wow. That's kind of cool. Where's that? Where exactly?
They do not think they're to tell anybody where he is.
Hmm.
For good reason.
That makes sense. I guess I should have figured that
like
out.
Like Hyperion, the biggest tree in North America. They yeah. don't tell anybody where he actually is.
Right. Right. We've talked about that one
yeah.
before.
I mean, they shouldn't.
Right.
Because the ones that they think are Hyperion
yeah.
Is like the bottom of it is destroyed and has yeah. infections and stuff like it. The park is treating constantly.
Yeah.
Dang. So.
The giant redwoods, you know, that's kind of sad. We lost them all. We're losing a lot of the flora and the fauna in the world. And
like I said, these ones are a lot faster.
Yeah.
You ready for this next one?
Yeah.
The Poska.
Okay.
So we're going into Europe.
Okay, across the pond.
Croatia, right?
Okay.
The Poska means jumper. Is a legendary monster snake. It is not a monster by size, monster by attitude.
Okay.
It is said that the snake could jump into the air as high as 6 feet and attack its prey by jumping on its head from the trees and strangling it.
That's pretty wild.
No snake known to science has the ability to jump into the air, though. They can kind of lunge and stuff like that.
Except this one.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
At best, snakes can lunge while striking. So this creature said to only be 2 to 3 feet long and the thickness of 1.5 inches. The color of its scales is gray to dark reddish brown, and it has a horn on the end of its nose. It is an extremely venomous snake and can be aggressive when disturbed. It can jump 5 feet into the air. It lives in the region of Doltima, which spans multiple Balkan countries, including Croatia, Bosnia, Herzegovina. Yeah. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Any guesses? I knew you weren't going to get some of these last ones.
A horn snake. Okay, I'm going to guess, but I don't remember exactly what it was, but I'm going to see if you can remember. Do you remember, it was a couple years ago, we were out at, it might have been a Hocking Hills Bigfoot Festival, now that I think about it, but it was after the fact. We were hanging around the fire with Jeff Carpenter. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm. A red-bellied beak snake.
Yep. Is that a red-bellied beak snake?
No.
Dang it. The whole, I don't know. That was the only thing.
And
I
he was
think
like,
of.
What?
Yeah.
He's and like, looked no, it up. And then we looked it up on his phone, and yeah. It was real, and yeah. It was there.
Yeah. So, nope, not that one?
No.
That's the only thing I can think of. I don't
and
know.
And I was hammered, and he was using me as an encyclopedia and saying everything I was. He's like, that's not right. And then he'd look it up on his phone, and it would be there.
Yeah. I don't know. Jumping horned serpent.
Yes, ish. I mean, I'll give you
ooh.
A half point.
That's some goosebumps.
There's a couple extremely rare or extinct snakes it could be.
Okay.
The Balkan whip snake, the large whip snake, the Dalhaz whip snake, and the Western whip snake.
So for sure it's a whip snake.
No. Because these are all non-venomous snakes, similar size and color to the Poshk. As plausible theories, but it still doesn't explain the jumping and the attacking method in the venom. There are a couple vipers in the area, though, including the Orshan's viper, the common viper, and the nose-horned viper.
Uh-oh.
While the nose-horned viper matches the Poshka's description most, it can't really jump in the air, but it will lunge at people.
Maybe that's what it's
saying.
These
snakes are often seen in brushes and low trees and sometimes presumed to have jumped there. Really, they climbed up there, but as a defense mechanism, they will fall out of the tree, which may have confused people for the post jumping.
Right.
Instead, they were jumping, they were falling.
Gotcha. With style.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Any questions about that one?
No. How poisonous are they?
Venomous. They're not
or
poisonous
Or how venomous
at all.
Are they? Sorry.
They're not poisonous.
How venomous are they? Like extreme, like is it, they bite you, you're dead kind
no,
of thing?
No, I think it's much more milder. None. So you can't die from any of them, any viper bite. But I think it's on par with a lot of European vipers to where, you know, there used to be a lot of venomous snakes in all over Europe, right?
Uh-uh.
They killed all of them.
No.
So almost all their vipers are really, really rare.
Dang.
Because people are scared of them.
People are weak and soft.
Most of their vipers, I mean, can cause like paralysis, coagulation, necrotizing flesh.
Okay.
But I don't think these guys have any serious threat to human life.
Okay.
It'd be like getting bit by a copperhead here in the U.S. Or it's going to, don't get me wrong, it's going to suck the whole time.
Right, but you're not going
to
die.
Most people that get bit by copperheads in the U.S. don't even have to go to the hospital.
Okay.
But
see, I didn't know that.
Most people still do, but they don't, they just give you fluids and tell you it's going to suck for the next 10 hours.
Yeah. Better safe than sorry to go.
But if you're allergic, it can be a whole different thing. Which there are people that are allergic to snake venom.
That sounds terrible.
It's the same thing with bee stings, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there's a difference between anaphylaxis and the actual venom of the bee.
Gotcha.
Anaphylaxis is your body's reaction.
Response, yeah.
So it happens with fish venom and snake venom as well, as well as, you know, insect venom. Insects are just more common.
What about mammal venom?
I think it would happen. I think there are people that are probably allergic to platypus venom.
Yeah.
I think it's very... I think it's very hard. Maybe it's not rare. How many people get stung by a platypus?
Well,
there's not a big sample size.
But see, but we don't know. how maybe you and I both are allergic to platypus.
That's what I'm saying, is there's not a big sample size of people that have gotten stung by a platypus.
Oh, so it might not be rare at all.
Yeah, okay. Everybody may be allergic.
Yeah, interesting.
There's only probably, I can only know one person. It was a zookeeper in Australia that got stung, and they showed a video of her.
What happened?
Oh, it was
bad.
She was on the ground writhing in pain, and this is a lady that had gotten bit by a couple of Australia's venomous snakes.
Yeah. I mean, did she live?
Yeah.
Okay.
She lived. They were worried she was going to have a heart attack.
From how?
From her body's reaction to the venom, the pain.
Gosh, that's
so crazy. It causes more of a pain reaction than like a necrotizing reaction or anything like that.
Sounds terrible.
But they were like trying to give her stuff to calm her heart down.
Yeah.
Like, you need to calm down.
That sounds
terrible. Same lady that gotten bit by like all these colubrid snakes from Australia that'll kill you.
It was the same lady also that ate the dog biscuit in that one video. No.
Okay, next one. The U50.
U50?
U50.
U50.
Another Congo.
Okay.
Malawi, and I have friends from Malawi. The jungles there, there is a creature. The U50 means a ghost. It is a chimpanzee-like animal from the folklore of the Malawi people that live in the Nakaba Bay, the western shores of Lake Nisi. In Malawi, the chimpanzees are native to the Congo jungle, are far away from Malawi, though. The nearest colony is in the Nuruwe Mountains of Tanzania, which is still far enough, so reports and sightings are ignored until it's captured near the Lisman River by a surprise zoologist. So in this, they were like, yeah, we have this, U50 is like a chimp, like a ghost in the woods.
Okay.
It's like a man.
Okay.
So, I mean, this one you really don't have to guess. I'm going to give you the pass because it's just a chimpanzee.
Oh, okay. There's no secret or...
No, it's just a chimpanzee. It's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
Or there was no chimpanzees.
So you think one like got moved there or no. One...
So I think they... Well, we'll get there. Okay. They caught one there.
Okay.
U50 reports are curiously watched the road and bridges construction in the vicinity of this river shortly before its capture. So they were seeing this big one that was just sitting there watching people build roads, and it was not sitting close to him, but it was sitting off.
Yeah.
And just watching people do stuff.
Yeah.
Just curious.
And then human nature's like, have him.
They got photos of it.
Yeah.
And people are, to prove it, they caught it. The U50 was just definitely a common chimpanzee.
Okay.
She was huge, and this is one specific one. She was huge, black in color, short, dense fur, but also exhibited unexpected features like pale gray saddled shape markings on her back, which is only found in gorillas, not chimpanzees. Characteristically, above are fit with creatures in Malawi folklore. So basically, there's another thought that this is a separate population similar to billy apes.
Gotcha. Okay.
By the 1960s, there were not many of them. They actually put her in a zoo, and she was very different. They called her the ghost chimpanzee. Mm. But she died in 1964, I believe. Yes. And right now, nobody sees them anymore.
Right.
So there's a big thought that Malawi actually did have a chimpanzee population, and they were similar to that of the billy apes, not as aggressive, but bigger with darker color or different colorations and everything.
So just another kind of speciated
chimp.
But chimp.
They're hundreds of miles from where the nearest chimp.
Where was... This is just made me think of that place where they discovered those, 40,000 like apes that were hidden. Was that the Congo?
No, was it? No, I think it was southern. Like, it was further south than that.
Okay.
The Congo is right... I can't remember if it's right above or right below the equator. Because the equator is the desert, and then it's either right above or right below. I think it's below.
Yeah, probably right below. Because, I mean, just for example there, I'm wondering, because we don't know if that chimpanzee, like, was supposed to be there or not. But, like, with those gorillas, we didn't know they were all there, and there was, what was it? I think it was 40,000.
That's what I lean towards.
Yeah, it was already there.
That she was one of the last ones.
Oh, just one of the last ones? Not that they're
Malawi,
remaining hidden?
Yeah, because I know a lot about Malawi personally, because I've had a lot of friends from Malawi.
Oh, wow.
When I went to school.
Dang.
Solo, have you ever listened to this? I missed you, buddy. So Solo came from Malawi to learn how to raise fish because they have a big lake and a river. Yes,
remember you telling me this, yeah.
All the other countries around Malawi are at war besides Malawi. So people in Malawi really can't leave.
Gotcha.
They don't have access to ocean or anything.
They're landlocked.
Like that. So Malawi's population ate up its natural resources very quickly after that.
Gotcha.
So I think that she was probably in the 60s and 70s. There were still a couple of them being seen, the Euphytes. But
they were all just decimated?
They were wiped out. Their habitat, maybe they weren't killed. Their habitat was wiped out for farmland and stuff like that because these people in Malawi could not leave.
Yeah.
And they could not get resources in.
So they needed to start growing their own food.
They became a very self-sufficient people.
Yeah.
So they pretty much cleared off all their land and they turned their lake into a giant fish farm.
That's pretty cool.
Because they had to, because everywhere else is war around them.
Right, yeah.
And they were they can't afford to pick sides in any of it because the other side will wipe them out.
Gotcha.
They don't have a strong military. Like, they can't. If there was a war brought to them, it would not be good for the Malawi people.
Gotcha.
And from my very limited sample group, I love people from Malawi. I talked to Solo and his brothers and his family at home, and they're great. They're very kind, fun people. Mm. Solo was one of the hardest workers I've ever met. Mm. Like, he was here for a purpose.
Right, yeah.
So his family saved up enough money for him to come to school and not get a job. He didn't, so he could just do schoolwork.
Oh,
and
wow.
He was doubling up semesters and stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know if you ever listened to this, Solo, but miss you. He was a good guy.
That's nice.
He had kids.
Good. Oh, good.
Well, I mean, he left him. He had to leave him at home.
Oh, gotcha. I thought you meant after.
And we taught him euchre.
Like, yeah, he had kids and everything. But no, that's awesome. It's good. You know, those are the things that are nice, like, to provide that stuff for people.
If I could, that would be a country I would love to visit.
Yeah?
I don't want to visit any of the countries around it.
Maybe we could arrange that somehow.
I would love to go to Malawi.
Yeah. Imagine us in Malawi.
I would have fun.
Me too. I think we'd blend right in.
I don't know if Emily still knows any. Solo tried to teach us some of the language.
Oh gosh, how about we not try that on the show?
No, I mean, it was just words. Like, I used to know some of them. It was a lot of food.
Okay, I'm afraid.
I can't remember any of them.
Afraid what would come out of your mouth.
All right, for the next one? I have almost nothing on this next one for you.
Oh, then I'll definitely get it.
The Zipholis. Zip-a-lis.
Zipholis.
In medieval folklore, the Zipholis, also known as the water owl.
Whoa.
Was a monster nautical creature, said to attack ships in the northern sea with its massive tusk. It possessed the body of a fish and the head of an owl, complete with its extremely massive eyes and its wedge-shaped beak.
Okay.
The body of a fish, the eyes of an owl with a wedge-shaped beak, the Zipholis, means sword-like in Latin, referring to the beast fins.
Okay.
It was said it was able to cleave the hull of a ship like a blade.
Just cuts right into it?
Mm-hmm.
With its fins?
No, with its face.
Okay. I thought you said sword-like fins.
Its beak.
Okay. Hmm. So it can't be it's just this regular old swordfish.
Nope, not a fish at all.
Okay. Not a fish at all then. Oh my gosh. A big turtle. Big old turtle.
I'm really disappointed. You should have got this one.
Should I?
The Cavier's beaked whale.
Oh, I was going to say beaked whale at first, but I didn't think.
A beaked whale!
I didn't think it was. I thought it was too. The sword like.
A giant fish like body with a beak.
Well, the sword thing got me. You said the word sword. I went off beaked whale.
I'm really disappointed in you. I never stopped talking about beaked whales.
I like the bottlenose beaked whale.
Yeah, that is probably your favorite. Caviars are up there. Yeah. The caviar is a beaked whale. They exist everywhere. They're very rare, though. We have no idea. So if you look at their habitat distribution, it's just the ocean. It's just all of them.
Yeah.
It's just funny to me.
Wasn't that the one they just caught on camera like a couple years ago or something?
A caviar's? No, I think it was a ginkgo.
Okay.
There are like 50 species of beaked whale that a lot of them have only been seen like two or three times ever.
Yeah. One of them was that bottlenose beaked whale.
Yeah, and he was up eating. That was the coolest interaction I've ever seen with a beaked whale ever, where it was eating those fish off the back of the ship.
Yeah.
And they're one of the biggest. Actually, no, I take that back. They are the biggest of the beaked whales known species.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
They get like 60 feet long. They're massive.
Wow.
We know nothing about their behaviors. That was one of the most unique experiences. I'd have paid anything for that experience. Just see one like that with it jiggling its head and eating fish. The caviar's beaked whale, its scientific name is Zipholis cartivus, named after. They killed one, and they're like, oh, that's a Zipholis. That's whatever what they were calling this creature.
Yeah.
So it must have had behaviors that it does not exist in modern day.
Okay.
That it was a ship attacker or somehow it gained a reputation of being a ship attacker in medieval times.
Well, I mean, I have two reasons I could explain that. One, all those beaked whales that are all over the old maps makes me wonder that they were probably more...
They were definitely more common. They were the first to get burned into oil.
Right, so that's probably why they were attacking ships. I bet they were at a certain point because they were all getting destroyed. And then they realized just to stay away, but then maybe one just had enough. It's like, I'm still going to go after you. He didn't get the memo to stay away.
So you can find beaked whales in more places, or you can find the caviar's beaked whale in more places than any other beaked whale in the world.
Wow, okay.
They live in the Antarctic and the Arctic. They live across the equator, which is pretty rare for a blubbered mammal.
To cross, yeah.
These guys just show up because it's mostly because they live in such deep water. They don't spend much time at the surface at all, so they really don't care.
Doesn't matter.
They're just coming up to breathe. They can go as deep as 3 kilometers, aka about 2 miles.
That's wild. That's wild.
And they can hold their breath for 2 to 2.5 hours. Some scientists think even more. They're amazing divers.
Maybe that's one of these guys, that shark that pulled it down in the bottom of the ocean.
It would have to be body temperature would be wrong.
Oh, dang it. All right.
I'm not saying it couldn't be a beaked whale. Yeah, I don't think it is.
And we're back to turtle.
A French scientist named Georges Cleaver is first one to describe the whale when he did in 1823 when he found an old skull on the coast of France. A farmer found it in 1803. A farmer found a skull on the coast of France and brought it to him 20 years later. Cavier named it Ziphilis cartivus. The name cartivus comes from the Latin word meaning hollow, which because the whale's skull had a deep hollow.
Mm, makes sense.
Where its echolocation, it's melon. It's called a melon. Oh, okay. That organ is full of jelly. It's called a melon.
Oh, okay.
Like belugas, that big jiggly thing is a melon. It's actually like a ball inside their head.
Hmm.
That's why it's okay to like touch and play with a little bit. Like you're not hurting anything. Like if you punch it or whatever, yeah, you hurt it.
Different story.
Touching it and stuff, they do that in nature where they'll rub it with each other and stuff because it's full of so many sensory organs.
Gotcha.
I mean, it's just like a sensitive part of anybody, but because of the hollow is featured to help identify the species, the first caviar's beaked whale was thought to be extinct. They compared its skull to some of the descriptions of the older Ziphilis.
Yeah.
And like, this is the monster that they were talking about. They're dead. They're gone. Gotcha. But in the 1850s, scientists learned that the whale was still alive. Although scientist Paul Grievous compared caviar's beaked whale skull found to one on a beach and found out they were the same species.
Ah, nice. Okay. Connecting the dots there.
Mm-hmm. Caviar's beaked whale are mostly squid eaters. They also hunt fish that live in the deep ocean, but a big part of their diet is mostly squid.
Mm.
On March of 2014, a caviar's beaked whale set the diving record when we were able to put one, like a tracker
on one.
It dived to 3.2 kilometers, which is the deepest dive ever recorded by any sea mammal.
That's pretty awesome.
Even though they are a type of toothed whale, they don't use their teeth much for eating. Adult whales have 2 small teeth that stick out of their lower jaw. Instead of chewing, they suck in their food.
Mm.
They do this by making their throat bigger, like a vacuum cleaner.
I was going to say, like a largemouth bass.
It's all they all do kind of the same motion, like to create a vacuum. The caviar's beaked whale is probably the Ziphilis.
Yeah, that seems like it would line up.
And they were very confident in this, you know, from their earlier days, showing the depictions of the creature, saying when they found the skull and seen the beak and everything, they're like, whale with a owl face?
Yeah.
Yes.
Beaked whale. No, that makes sense.
And there's dozens of beaked whale species that have only been seen one time.
Right.
The newest species of beaked whale is a mom and a calf that were dead on a beach in New Zealand. It's the only time it's ever been seen.
Ooh, okay.
And they were stuffed full of plastic.
Plastics. Go figure.
They're the number one killer of beaked whales.
Go figure.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
All right, ready for this one?
Yeah, how many more we got?
Just a couple.
Okay.
The Mubala.
The what?
The Mubala.
Mubala.
The Mubala.
Okay.
It's just the Mubala.
All right, yes.
It's also known as the Congo peafowl.
Okay, so we're back in the Congo.
Which was formally described in 1936 by Dr. James P. Chaplin, an American ornithologist in the New York Zoology Society. His discovery was unusual as it didn't come from a direct expedition to find new birds. Instead, in the early 1900s, Kaplan had an unsuccessful expedition searching for...
The Mubala.
The Okapi.
Oh.
When he noticed unidentifiable reddish-brown feathers adorning the headdresses of native Congolese people. These feathers didn't match any known African bird species. So they kind of thought he was making it up.
Okay.
That he failed.
Yeah, but he found this instead.
Yeah, because he was looking for the unicorn.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, he went looking for a unicorn and found a peacock. So the peacocks are only native to Asia.
Okay.
Both species of peacock are only native to Asia.
Okay.
So he's like, yeah, Congolese peacock or Congo peacock, African peacock, whatever you want to call it. Years later, in 1934, when visiting the Royal Museum of Central Africa in Treveen, Belgium, Chaplin stumbled upon two stuffed bird specimens labeled Indian peacocks. However, he immediately recognized that their feathers were identical to those of the ones he'd seen in the Congo. He realized that they were not Indian peacocks, but an entirely distinct, previously unknown species of peafowl from Africa. This groundbreaking insight led to the formal scientific description confirming the existence of this unique African species. Do you want to guess what it is?
Oh, gosh. Is it some kind of guinea fowl?
No, it's a peacock.
It is just a peacock?
Yep. I'm like, this is the one. I'm like, it's so easy.
But is it like a...
It is actual a peafowl.
From like an African subspecies, not like one from Asia they brought over.
No, it is its own thing.
Okay, cool.
The species of peafowl have been discovered. The peacocks were not are native to any other place in Asia. Nobody expected to find a species of peacock existing naturally elsewhere, especially not Africa.
Yeah.
However, feathers like the peacock, except they were slightly different color scheme, were coming from all over the Congo in the feather trade.
Interesting. Okay.
And the same areas where the okapi was discovered. But yeah, so they were arguing about this. They thought this was a hook'em. Then they thought it was people catching Indian peacocks and bringing them over. And then they discovered this is another postal child for the once was's.
So is this guy still around?
Yeah, yeah. You can see it. They're rare, but they're not.
Okay,
they're not endangered or anything like that.
Okay.
They're just very secretive.
What would they be called? The African peacock?
I got pictures of them if you want to see them.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Okay.
They're not as flashy as an Indian peacock, but they still are incredibly beautiful.
Yeah.
Their tails aren't nearly as big or dramatic, and their headdresses aren't nearly as big and dramatic.
Congo peafowl is there. Yeah.
Peafowl is the group. Peahen is a girl. Peacock is a boy.
Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah. They often, adult African peacocks look extremely similar to Asian peacocks at their immature state.
Okay. Gotcha.
So if you mix up a box of them, it could be very confusing.
Until they're older.
Well, because the African peacocks are going to look the same the whole time.
Right. Okay, gotcha, yeah.
The birds are known as the Congo peacock, the Congo peafowl, or the African peafowl. The natives know them as the Mubala.
Mubala. No, that's a cool one.
All right. You ready for this?
Yeah.
This is... A lot of these guys are really, really rare.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the point, right?
The Huni... Kim Dragon King.
Okay, I'm assuming this one's in Asia.
What would give you that idea?
The Kim, the dragon.
Huni Kim Lake in Vietnam.
There we go.
I'm not going to tell you what the animal is. The Huni Kim was a former cryptid. It's said to live in the Huni Kim Lake in Hunai, Vietnam. These creatures are very important figures in Vietnamese folklore, leaving many to once believe they were purely cryptozoological. People hadn't seen him.
Right.
The existence was proven when one was caught finally in 1998. And it was probably the last one to ever live.
Okay.
They're probably extinct.
So this is a fish.
According to the Vietnam legend, Emperor Li Lao, along with his magic sword, I'm not even going to try to say his magic sword's name, means roughly heaven's will, boating on the lake when a golden turtle god named Kin Ku surfaced the water. Kin Ku asked Liolo, the sword, which had been landed on him by the Dragon King Long Ver. Leo concluded that the Dragon King was Kin's master who came to collect the sword. He gave the sword to the turtle who ascended back to the waters along with his sword. To commemorate this event, Leo renamed the lake Lukave, which means green water, to Hinokim, which means Lake of the Returned Sword.
Okay.
So this creature is described as being a mithril or a godlike turtle, able to stop the flows of rivers when it moves.
Gosh. Okay. Is that supposed to be my hint?
Mm-hmm. Prior to its discovery, people had many reports and sightings of massive turtles in the lake. Some even describe it as being a true monster, or even the golden turtle itself from Legends, seeing what appeared to be a gigantic golden blob.
Golden turtle? Oh, man. I think I'm going to miss again.
Go ahead.
No, I'm not. Keep going.
I'm going to give it away if I keep going.
Okay.
Because I'm going to talk about its discovery and everything.
Oh, goodness. Okay. So is it a, I guess, is it just a turtle?
Oh, no, sorry.
Oh, all right. Cool. These are getting a little easier. I just guess the animal here. All right. So we got a turtle here. What is this? Some rare?
Yeah.
Extremely rare. I was at my first initial guess was going to be a loach. So I'm glad I went turtle.
Oh, yeah. Giant golden dojo loach would be cool. Hyun Kim's turtle. In June 2nd of 1967, this is a lake that there's a town on, and there's a monster hiding in it, extremely rare species of turtle.
That's pretty cool.
Climbed on the shore and was injured by a fisherman who beat it with a crowbar.
Oh, geez.
The turtle later died of its injuries and was said to be more than 200 kilograms, a.k.a. 440 pounds.
That's a big boy.
Its shell measured 6.5 feet long.
No way.
And it was over 500 years old, and a guy beat it to death with a crowbar.
When was this?
1967.
Oh my gosh.
This turtle has been embalmed and is now on display in the temple of the Jade Mountain, which is near the lake.
You know, and it's the 60s, sure, but you know, we're so advanced as a society and a civilization. We lost touch with nature. If that turtle even came out now in 2025, about like 4 people would beat it with a crowbar.
On March 24th of 1998, an amateur cameraman caught a video of a turtle proving its existence for the first time ever.
Wow.
The footage was aired on the Vietnamese television station and stated that it had made the second appearance on April 5th. This is a lake that people live by.
Right.
And there's the biggest turtle in the freshwater turtle in the world.
And they're just now discovering it.
Well, yeah. Well, they like I said, there's hundreds and hundreds of years of talking about the god turtle that lives in the lake.
Right. And they're just now realizing it and killing it.
Well, the one guy did.
Yeah. Mr. Crowbar. In 2000,
Professor He D. Duc, who had been researching turtles for decades, gave the name Rufus Leo after the legend. Hoon Kim's turtle was later proven to be a Yangtze giant softshell turtle.
Wow.
A critically endangered turtle species native to northern China and northern Vietnam.
Wow.
Duke, however, disagreed with this and believed it was a new species altogether. He is against the idea of the crossbreeding turtles of these two kinds because they're both obviously extremely rare.
Right.
So one of the thoughts is, well, if they're the same species, just breed them together, like then we have more genetics. If they're not the same species, then you're just making a genetic mutt.
Yeah, basically.
It doesn't do anybody any good.
Yeah.
Although two, sometimes three turtles have been reported, Professor Duc believes that only one turtle is still alive in the lake.
Okay.
The last turtle was known by locals as Kuri, meaning the great-great-grandfather turtle.
Okay.
In the spring of 2011, concerns about the turtle's health had increased after noticing by multiple wounds and lesions all over its body. Kuri had been reportedly frequently surfacing for air more often than he normally did. City authorities had attempted to catch the turtle and take him for medical treatment. On February 9th, local turtle farm operator Cat Group was commissioned to prep a suitable net to capture the turtle and not hurt it. The first attempt to capture it was done on March 8th, which failed as the turtle broke free of the net immediately. It was just way too big.
You ain't keeping him contained.
Does it sound like anybody you know?
Yeah, the beast of Churubusco.
On April 3rd, the turtle was successfully captured by the team of 50 workers. They placed it into an enclosure constructed on a small island in the middle of the lake for treatment. According to scientists involved, the turtle was determined to be a female, and genetic research suggested that it was a distinct species to the Yangtze giant softshell turtle, which is not widely accepted by most experts. There's still a huge argument about this.
Right.
But it's a female. After its health had improved, Kuri was released back into the lake in July of 2011. However, the Hoon Kin Lake was found to be toxic and full of pollutants.
Oh.
Dragged into the lake to clean up the bottom, which was carried out in March of 2011. Concerns for the turtle's health continued after it surfaced 6 more times in January of 2015 alone, which is way, way higher than it ever did.
Well, yeah.
Kuri was last seen alive on December 21st of 2015. The turtle was found dead in January of 2016, which was believed to be well over 150 years old.
Dang.
Its death was deeply mourned and considered to be a tragic environmental and cultural loss for the locals.
Right, yeah.
After its death, Kuri was embalmed and is now residing in the temple of the Jade Mountain next to the previous embalmed turtle.
Mm-hmm.
Although no more Ygant's giant softshell turtles live in the Hoon Kim Lake, at least one and possibly a second has been spotted in Dungmi Lake, 20 miles to the northeast. The turtle was captured and confirmed to be a female. 5 to 6 living individuals of the Ygant's giant softshell turtle are thought to be left. One of them is capped, or one in China, and three to four wild turtles in Vietnam.
Hmm. That's so crazy.
I think I'm a bit believer that it's just Ygant's giant softshell turtles.
Yeah.
They're incredibly rare. I mean, like I said, there's 6 of them.
Yeah. Well, a good thing it was living in a highly polluted lake. Yeah, that's nice environment for it. Yeah. Now, that's sad story to how that one ended, but.
I got one more for you.
Ooh, the finale of the season finale. We made it.
I don't think you're ever going to get this one.
No, okay.
So, a pink wading bird has been seen from 2012 to 2024 in the northern United States.
A pink what bird?
Wading bird. Like a heron or a crane or whatever, okay. Where they walk through the water. It's called wading. New York, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Michigan, New Jersey, Canada, and Ohio have all had sightings of this pink creature.
Okay.
And it's hot pink.
Okay.
Reports started in the early 2010s when it was declared a cryptid. However, these claims were proven correct, with multiple photos being taken confirming this creature's existence. It is uncertain how this creature came to be to the northern states, as nobody has seen them fly into the states, nor has anybody seen them leave, which is very odd for a giant hot pink bird.
Right.
They are only found, generally, this animal that belongs to, in the southern coastal states, a very different environment to Michigan, Minnesota, United States, upstate New York, and central Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Any guesses of what this could be?
Some kind of ibis that got under some chemicals.
I was gonna say like a cement truck.
Yeah, it found. Yeah,
no, this may be the resurgence. Oh, sorry. The northern spoonbill.
Okay.
A hot pink giant wading bird.
Northern spoonbill. Oh, cool. Those look neat. Those look really neat.
So, let's talk about this.
That doesn't even look real.
They are. So, like I said, they normally just exist in the southern United States. But recently, they have been seen, since 2010 to this year, have been seen all over the northern United States. Not dying, not traveling back and forth. There's thoughts that they may be surviving in the northern. So, there's a chance. I'll read the rest of this article here in a second. But there's a chance that it's just the southern species that our lighter winters are allowing them to move north.
Yeah.
There's another chance that there is always a northern species, and due to pollution of our rivers used to catching on fire, farmization of the area, industrialization, that the northern population, the ones that could leave, went south.
Yeah.
And now that our waters are the cleanest they've been in 6 or 7 decades, if not more, they're moving back in, and they're truly a northern spoonbill species.
Wow.
A whole new species that's been hiding in front of us the whole time.
Coming back home.
A hot pink bird that was hiding the whole time.
Which is crazy. Hot pink, like body. Its wings were even red.
Bright
red.
Red and orange and black. They're crazy looking.
Look wild.
But yeah. So most recent sightings were in New York, where a mating pair of spoonbills were spotted in a park, in the National Park in upstate New York. They were breeding.
In public?
No, but they were actually actually reproducing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
This is the only confirmed pair, and they think it was brought up because of a hurricane.
Oh, okay. So we're still not sure if there is a northern species or if it's just the southern one that came up here?
Yes, we don't know.
Okay.
I really don't know personally, but they're calling them the Newfoundland flamingos.
They're literally that pink, like flamingo pink.
They get pink the same, kind of the same way.
Oh, I was going to say, is it from their diet? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ish. They also have that kind of pink-red pigment.
Is that the same color pink that my cat was? Remember I told you I had that pink cat?
Yeah.
It got into the wheat seeds, and that's where it was born. It was born in the wheat seeds. It was a white cat, and for the first, 4 months of its life, it was hot, tickle-me pink.
So, yeah, I really think this could be... I'm moving the mic. Sorry.
Northern subspecies?
Either a subspecies, or that we wiped them out, or that the southern species and the used to come north a lot more.
Okay.
And like, well, everything from sandhill cranes, wood storks, a lot of wading birds do that, where they spend a part of their life in the north and a part of their life in the south, or have an extremely wide range.
I mean, if you could fly, wouldn't you?
There is a huge part of like sandhill cranes that migrate, and there's a huge population that don't.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that finally, that either ecologically, the wetlands that they need are finally cleaned up enough.
And they're here, yeah.
That they can come back. I could really see it either way. That there is a subspecies or there, even maybe a distinct species of northern shoebill.
Mm-hmm.
That they were hiding out in the south.
Mm.
Until things
were better.
It got better. Mm-hmm. Until the rivers weren't catching fire anymore. So like I said, they started seeing them in like 2009, 2010. And then by like now there's not a lot of them, but they're actively breeding again.
Right.
Like we're finding breeding nests in New York and Pennsylvania and Ohio and Michigan, in Minnesota.
Gotcha.
Like the Great Lakes regions.
Mm-hmm.
Are active. They're shoebills that are actively reproducing.
Right. We've seen it. It's on camera. Well, it was what I witnessed.
I mean, zoologists and park, like there's like, yes, there's a shoebill nest in here.
Right. Yeah.
That is insane. Like, so I really don't know if it's just them taking advantage of, you know, our lighter winters we've been having and they've been able to move up. Personally, I don't think that's it. They do have quite large migrations, so they could have just flown up for the season and like, well, it's not bad, I'll stick around.
Yeah.
I really don't know. What do you think?
I would guess it's probably just the southern ones, but again, I don't know. But if they were up here and they can hang and they can last up here, maybe they were here. If it's already built into their DNA, because if it was a southern one, they just come up here and might have a rough time sticking around. But yeah, I don't know. I'm no bird expert. My name's not Ralph. I'm only one man. But yeah, I don't know.
He listens to this.
I hope so. No, these are really neat. These are really neat ones.
That's been part four, season seven finale.
Dang.
Once again, guys.
The
once wasers.
Is that what it was? No.
Yeah.
Once was. Once wases.
The once wases was a bear.
Yeah, I know. That's all I could keep thinking of.
But no, we want to say thank you guys for your continued support.
Yeah, we made it through season seven.
Yeah.
Holy crap, seven seasons.
It's been great. Thank you guys.
It's kind of wild.
It's been very, very wild. Thank you for your support, for your continued just, you know, hanging out with us and having fun with us.
Yeah.
There's a lot of new stuff coming in season eight.
Yeah. Just a lot of new in general.
I think later on, I don't know when it'll happen, but there's a video aspect, you know, coming soon.
We're growing. Have we announced the announcement publicly?
You did on
Patreon?
No, on Cribs and Coffee.
Oh, but not on an actual episode.
No, go ahead. Talk about it.
So we are, if you made it this far into the
hour and a half into part four.
Yeah, part four. We are officially under construction. It's happening. We mentioned it back in season like two or three, but it's actually under construction now, and it's almost done. By the time this episode comes out, I think the outside will be done and refinished.
It should be done by the time this comes out.
Yeah.
The outside.
Right, the outside. We're getting our own studio. We're putting together our own studio where we can record this bit in video. The next step will be us, and you can see our ugly faces when we do all this crap. So it'll be fun. But that's coming along with it. So we'll have videos for not only this show, but we'll give the DW guys a space for them to work out of too. And Freaky Fauna Friday, it will just bring a whole new element to the show and more interactiveness with you guys. So we're really looking forward to it. Yeah, basically that's it. I guess Jamboree already have happened, but you make it at Bigfoot Jamboree, you'd be able to see.
Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks for hanging out, and I'm glad you were able to check out the studio as it's under construction. So we'll be sharing pictures. I've been taking pictures as the process has been going along. So you'll kind of see what it once was and to what it's about to be finished to be.
The once wases.
Yeah, the once wases. It once wases an old shack. An old tore down, demolished, tore into shack that a raccoon has been living out of for the past decade.
Gosh, yeah.
Roughly.
But it was stinky.
I evicted all of his poop out of the ceilings, we took this old building, gutted it completely down to the bones. I mean, all that was left was 2x4, sheeting on the roof, and what was it, like 1x12s, old 1x12s they had the side lined with. which is nuts, kind of cool to see now because we don't build stuff like that anymore.
No, it was definitely the old style.
And it was an old building that they moved and then added on to, I think, twice.
You can tell.
Oh, yeah. You see where all the, after ripping all the stuff, peeling it down to its bones, you see it, it's where all the patchwork, where it's not patchwork.
No, but
pieced together.
Newer wood versus older wood.
Yes.
The colors, I mean.
Very, yes. And even the thickness, yeah, it's all old and new, but now it's going to be one big cohesive building. And guess what? We're adding on another room to it, too, which is kind of funny. So it's getting added on to again.
Where are we putting the new room?
On the front porch area.
Oh, that's going to be a room?
Yeah, we're boxing it in.
Oh, good.
So we're going to have, that'll be like an entry room, like a little waiting room. Hang out, which we'll put all the cool stuff, like posters and stuff and whatnot.
Isn't that where we talk about having Timothy maybe do something?
Yeah, doing something in there in that waiting room. Timothy Wayne Williams, famous artist. Check him out.
I would love to do it. Like, oh, yeah, Timothy Wayne Williams.
Great. If you guys would like to, I guess, any guests we've had on the show, now we're going to have a official space to bring them in and high-def cameras right in their faces. We can see all their pores. So if there's anybody's pores you've listened to on the show.
Anybody's pores you've listened to.
That you want to see. Let us know. Comment on who you want to see on the show. Interviews. I mean, we have 7 seasons now to go through. We can go back and rehash stuff with people. Bring on old guests into the new studio. Get them on camera. Let us know who you'd like to see. Let us know some of your favorite guests that were from the show, because we've got a lot. And I'd say almost all of them we're friends with.
I can't think of any we're not friends with.
Right.
We don't have contact with or anything like that.
That we don't talk to, at least semi, I mean, regular. It's hard to talk to everybody all the time, but at least a few times a year we're talking back and forth. So, yeah, it's an exciting thing to look forward to. I guess just stay tuned.
You know, I think for season 7, I'm going to let you hit the button.
I got to end it?
Yeah.
Well, I got to find it.
No, it's there. It's already there.
This one?
Yeah, but don't do it yet.
Okay.
I have been the great and powerful mystery.
And I've been JClone779.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Crib is the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye! Bye.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.